from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, a Washington Post piece this week railing on San Francisco hit a nerve. So if you're feeling defensive, tell us what you love about the city. First, though, we want to talk about what's happening at the border. Children are dying in U.S. custody. We now know of 6 in 8 months after the government acknowledged the previously undisclosed death of a 10-year-old Salvadoran girl. And on Monday, a 16-year-old boy who'd been held in a processing center with a major flu outbreak also died. We find out what's going on and take your questions. Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The deaths of immigrant children while in U.S. government custody is prompting calls for investigations and policy changes. This week, we learned that 16-year-old Carlos Gregorio Hernandez Vasquez died Monday, shortly after crossing the southern border, and that in September, a 10-year-old Salvadoran girl also died. 4 other children have died since December. They were 7-year-old Jacqueline Call Makin, 8-year-old Felipe Gomez Alonso, 16-year-old Juan de Leon Gutierrez, and 2-year-old Wilmer Josue Ramirez Vasquez. Joining me now to talk about the health crisis at the border are Catherine Hampton. She's a network program officer at Physicians for Human Rights. Good morning, Catherine Hampton.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for being here. And Adolfo Flores is with us. He's National Security Correspondent for Immigration at BuzzFeed News. Good morning, Adolfo Flores.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here as well. And Adolfo Flores, I want to start with you. Tell us about the most recent death on Monday of Hernandez Vasquez, the 16-year-old from Guatemala. What makes his death particularly unique and troubling?
Well, one of the things that came out after he died was that he was held for a little over 6 days. And typically, CBP is only supposed to hold children for 72 hours.
That's Customs and Border Protection, yes.
Yes, U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And barring any emergency situation, 72 hours is sort of the guideline for how long they can hold children.
So the investigation right now into his death is asking what questions?
Why was he held for that long? What type of review or checks was he receiving, especially after he reported being sick?
And the other thing is that there has been a major flu outbreak at the facility where he was held. I know he was later transferred, but he spent time at a facility that was experiencing a major outbreak.
Yeah. So after a day or two after he died, they did some more checks on the people that were there, and they found that 32 people tested positive for influenza. So before that, they had shut down the processing center. They said they weren't going to be taking in any more migrants, and so they've reopened it since. After they've quarantined everybody who tested positive for influenza.
And these 5 other deaths that we are hearing about and that we are seeing prompt even more renewed calls for a look at what's happening at the border and how we can better handle the situation. Adolfo Flores, can you just talk about how unprecedented this number of deaths is?
Yeah, so before we learned about the girl who died in September, officials with U.S. Customs and Border Protection had said that there had not been any migrant child deaths in their custody for a decade before December, when Jacqueline Call died. So, to have this many after that amount of time, for what feels like it's back-to-back, is unprecedented.
Catherine Hampton, as you're hearing and reading about the ways that these 6 children have died about this flu outbreak at a Texas facility that I understand has affected nearly 36 people. What is this telling you about the strategies being used at the border with regard to health?
You know, what we're seeing at the border now is what everyone has agreed is that there's been a demographic shift and there's a greater number of children and families arriving at our borders, and they have different health needs. They have a specific health profile of this population. And unfortunately, the policies that are being implemented by the administration, instead of increasing opportunities to use alternatives to detention, policies which are going to favor better access to medical care, there's really been a concerted escalation in the number of children who are being detained and the duration that they're being detained. So, you know, everything in the medical evidence tells us that detention is very dangerous for children. These are not facilities that are adapted to children's needs, and the health risks are greatly increased by holding them in these facilities.
So give us an example, if you could, of something that you're concerned about and what your group is recommending.
One of the most important things is that we need to get kids out of detention. So one of the crucial aspects that we're strongly advocating for is clearer standards from Congress. It is a statutory requirement that unaccompanied children must be released from CBP detention to the Department of Health and Human Services within 72 hours. But we really need to have that requirement also for children who are in families. So all children should be out of these kind of holding cells, which do not have beds, which don't have showers. Often it's just a concrete floor with chain link fencing, Mylar blankets. You know, this is not the kind of conditions that you can hold anyone in, but especially not young children. It really increases the risk that, you know, any pre-existing conditions, any infectious diseases that are present among the population that they're being held with are going to spread more dangerously. So standards to increase the oversight and accountability and to ensure that we limit exposure of children to detention to as short a period as possible.
And when you say getting these children out of detention quickly, even the ones who've come with families, would that necessitate also having the family leave with the child at that time? Or are you saying even if it means separating the child from the family?
Children should never be separated from their parents unless there's an imminent risk of the parent actually harming the child, and that we know that, because separation has a devastating impact on children, and that's also very well documented. So what we would strongly advocate for is increased utilization of proven case management programming and other alternatives to detention. In previous administrations, the government very successfully implemented programs that allowed families seeking asylum to remain in the community while their proceedings are pending. They check in with a caseworker or a social worker. And these families are complying with immigration proceedings at rates over 90% in these pilot programs that were implemented. So there's absolutely no reason, according to the evidence that we have available, why we should not increasingly use alternatives to detention instead of the current policies, which is massively escalating the number of people who are being detained for no adequate reason. There's no good reason being given why it's necessary to force people to remain in these dangerous conditions.
Well, Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McAleenan went before Congress earlier this week, and he echoed some of your concerns about children, you know, needing to be transferred out of detention sooner and the 72-hour rule about getting them into Health and Human Services custody. Let me play that for you and get your reaction.
The 72-hour rule, where we try to transfer children to HHS custody within 3 days of their arrival, that's a critical protection for children. That's why this administration has asked for $3 billion additional dollars for HHS to provide additional bed space so that we can transfer unaccompanied children in a timely fashion. That's a critical part of our supplemental request, and we would appreciate if Congress would consider it.
So $3 billion, does Customs and Border Protection, does, you know, the overall infrastructure there with regard to the Office of Refugee Resettlement, HHS, do they need an infusion of $3 billion? And do you think that would make a big difference in terms of children's health?
I think we need to take a step back and talk about who these unaccompanied children are. You know, we know that the administration separated up to 5,000 children last year from their parents, and those children were classified as unaccompanied children. So, you know, I really appreciate that Commissioner McAleenan is aware of the harms of detaining children, but Office of Refugee Resettlement Custody also has a lot of health risks. Two of the children who've died were actually in Office of Refugee Resettlement Custody. So our preference would be that children with their families are released into the community for case management programming, and that unaccompanied children are released to sponsors. Another thing that happened last year was that the Department of Homeland Security was targeting people who stepped forward, family members, family friends who stepped forward to take care of unaccompanied children were targeted for arrest and deportation because the administration was basically using them as bait, using the children as bait to, you know, conduct other enforcement actions. And so we would strongly advocate that every effort taken.
Could you just explain a little more using the children as bait? What do you mean by that exactly?
You know, we're about to come out with a study. Physicians for Human Rights is about to come out with a study in the next couple of weeks based on over 180 clinical evaluations of child asylum seekers. And some of the major trends that we see, apart from the fact that many children are fleeing extreme levels of violence and persecution, but there's also, there are many cases where parents might have left earlier. They might have left their children with their grandparents thinking they would be safe, and the parents are being persecuted or facing severe harm, and they've gone to the United States first, or other relatives, uncles, cousins. So many children who are crossing the border as unaccompanied minors actually have the opportunity to reunite with family members once they reach the U.S. and to be safe, to have a home, to be with people they know who care for them. And so in previous administrations, you know, OR custody was really designed as more of a short-term accommodation. When children first arrive, they can, while the government is reaching out to their family members, doing a background check, releasing the children. But, you know, the 10-year-old girl who died in September, the official government press statement said after 7 months that she was transferred to Nebraska to be near her family. So the question is, what was she doing in detention for 7 months? Why was she not released to her family earlier? This is very concerning.
And your answer is that the reason she wasn't is because?
We don't know the details of the particular case, but overall, the policy has been a preference for detaining children, families, asylum seekers, not releasing them on parole, making them ineligible to be released on bond, arresting, you know, family members who step forward as sponsors for unaccompanied children. Like, these are actions which, when you take them all together, this is resulting in a drastic escalation in the numbers and the duration of children who are being detained, and that is creating the health risks.
But it's also true that they are seeing rather unprecedented numbers coming to the border. Catherine.
Yes, there has been a demographic change, and absolutely that requires a proactive policy response. But we would say the proactive policy response should not be spending billions of dollars on, you know, really trying to detain children longer and longer. The money should be spent supporting civil society organizations at the border who are already providing holistic, comprehensive services. It should be directed to alternatives to detention and case management programming, in addition to some money which should be used to improve the horrendous conditions for people who have to be detained for some reason.
And again, Catherine Hampton is Network Program Officer for Physicians for Human Rights. And we also have Adolfo Flores with us, National Security Correspondent for Immigration at BuzzFeed News. We're talking about the increasing number of children dying at the southern border and the public health crisis that's unfolding at U.S. detention facilities and what can be done. What are your questions or concerns for our guests? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us at KQED Forum or email us at forum@kqed.org. Adolfo Flores, we have also seen some very disturbing pictures over the past month of families at a Texas facility being detained outside of tents on the ground because there isn't enough room. I'm wondering, I know that you have been there and seen this situation for yourself. Has that been resolved?
As far as I know, that has not been resolved. People are still being held there. That's the McAllen station, which is the most recent one that I've been to. That's where people are first being put in after they're detained by Border Patrol agents in southern Texas. So
they're still sleeping outside on the ground under the bridge?
As far as I know, yes. They're still using those, I think they call them soft. They're still using that area to detain people.
And can you quickly describe for us how one of the folks who was detained there that you spoke with described that condition?
I spoke with several families. One of them said, we're being held like animals. It's difficult for us to ask for more food or for more water or better conditions. They wake them up really early. I was there a little before 5 a.m. and they were doing some kind of a roll call. And that's another thing that a lot of the families, complained about is, the kids are being woken up, in these like pre-dawn hours, for a roll call. And that's not something they were expecting.
Are they warm enough at night?
Well, right now it is warmer in Texas, but if you remember back, March,
yes,
people were being held under a bridge in El Paso, and that it was cold, and the Mylar blankets were not enough, and people were sleeping on the dirt, on gravel. U.S. Customs and Border Protection said this is, the best they could do because they're seeing this unprecedented number of families showing up at the border, and their facilities were not built for families. They were built for single adults back when it was mostly single adults from Mexico who were crossing the border.
Another thing that you have written about, of course, is about this sixth death that we learned about on Wednesday, about the Salvadoran girl, and Catherine Hampton spoke about this too. But one of the concerns is that we did not hear about her death that happened in September until this week. Can you talk about what the explanation has been around that and what are some of the concerns about the fact that the news did not come out sooner?
I don't know why that news has not come out sooner. The girl was in the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And so this is a question that, border officials were being asked, but it was a different agency. But even so, it's unclear why that the death, which occurred in September, is just coming out now.
Well, we have some calls coming in, and I'd like to go to our listeners. Trisha in San Francisco, join us.
Hello?
Hi, Trisha. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Hi, sorry. this kind of thing where we're separating children from their families and where kids are in jeopardy of severe health ailments and death makes people like me hysterical. And I talk to people who are Trump supporters, and they say, well, I'm going along with my daily life. Everything's just fine. They don't see the urgency of it. And the hysteria, I think, is part of the tactic, conscious or unconscious, that turns people off. So how do you speak to this barbarism that's going on in a way that's compelling, that people who aren't affected in their daily life can hear and our descent into tyranny and barbarism and just, you know, this kidnapping of children. And we have a higher degree of care that we need to take.
Tricia, thank you for that comment. And I know, Catherine Hampton, that you have been, and I'm not sure if what happened, your call may have dropped there, but Catherine, I know that you have been concerned about how these deaths seem to be, I don't know exactly how to put it, but that the community, the general population, doesn't seem as outraged as you would expect.
I think first the good news, which is that, you know what, people being outraged over the family separation policy was instrumental in ending the policy. And Commissioner McAleenan said that he noticed during that time that they had lost the public trust and that it wasn't worth, you know, losing the public trust in order to enforce family separations. So people who are speaking out, their voice is being heard. And, you know, please continue to speak out. Please continue to say, you know, detaining kids is not normal. This is not a normal thing anywhere. And it shouldn't be normal here. But I think related to addressing other audiences, you know, there's a lot of medical evidence out there. There are a lot of legal arguments. So I think being informed about how these policies and practices actually break the law, U.S. domestic and international legal commitments, and how they're harmful from a medical perspective. That's usually what we would advocate that people focus on.
Yes, but also you are expecting that there will be more deaths. And I heard you say that you are scared to death that we will be desensitized to them. What are you speaking to there?
You know, I think something that I hear a lot is we don't want to blame the individual Border Patrol agents, doctors working in these health facilities. And I would say yes, 100%. We are not blaming individuals. This is a systemic failure. This is a system. These are not accidents. These are predictable consequences. And starting from last summer, you know, even before we knew about these deaths, the entire medical community was speaking out, warning, saying, listen, these conditions are dangerous. This is not safe. This is not safe for anyone. And it's happening. So it's continuing to happen over and over again. And it's really important to look at the system overall and the kind of risks that we are creating by ignoring medical evidence and ignoring the legal standards that we have, and to understand that these are the predictable results. But this is not our only option. We can change. There are policy alternatives. Like, let's strongly pursue policy alternatives that will allow for people to be safe.
Well, Skip writes, why don't we work with the embassies, Honduras, Guatemala, Mexico, in repatriating children and unifying these families? Adolfo Flores, can you speak to that? And also, Zoe Lofgren, our South Bay congresswoman here in the Bay Area, has also put out a statement where she basically was saying that the Trump administration needs to deal with the refugee crisis at the point of origin in Central America instead of waiting for the refugees to move to our border. What movement, if any, are you seeing around those strategies?
Well, I mean, there have been more calls to address the issue at its root. And, you know, Mexico has also expressed a willingness to do it. But at the same time, the U.S., President Trump has said that he wants to cut aid to these countries in Central America, where we're seeing the majority of these families come from. So, you know, when you talk to experts, they say this is only going to make it worse. This is only going to make the surge that we're seeing at the border more difficult.
We're talking about the health crisis unfolding at the border. More after the break. I'm Mina Kim.